right Estonians in the country. I am Bob Enyar, America's right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. I'm going to try to do this quickly because in Denver on 670 AM KLTT, we're only on the first half hour of the program. And I want to tell a story, something that happened on Saturday. Saturday around the country was the March for Life, and I went down to the Denver Capitol to hear Dan Kaplis speak, and it was quite a neat time. Hundreds of people were out and fighting for the life of unborn children. Joe Scott was a speaker. Joe is a dear friend of mine, Ken and Joe Scott, and Joe talked about the two babies that were saved that very Saturday at Planned Parenthood in Denver, when Planned Parenthood had scheduled to kill those two babies, and because of Christians that were out there in front of the abortion mill offering help, those two babies are alive today. Praise the Lord for that. And a woman was there that showed her little baby that she went to Planned Parenthood. She was going to kill that baby. And another friend of ours, in fact, one of our associate producers, Jason Troyer, was at Planned Parenthood and yelling at that woman because she was going into the abortion mill, and often they don't stop to talk. You know, they don't want to chat. And he was yelling at her, don't become the mother of a dead baby. Don't kill your baby. And she went in, and inside that abortion mill, she could not get those words out of her head. She came back out, and she saved her baby's life. And she was at the March for Life on Saturday, and Joe Scott called her up, and she brought her beautiful little baby with her, who's now, what, half a year old? What a neat story. And when Jason Troyer helped to save that baby, that, I remember, that was on a Saturday. That Sunday morning, Jason was in church. He does the announcements at our church, Denver Bible Church. And he announced, he told the story that this little baby was saved the day before. Of course, the entire church clapped, applauded, cheered for Jason and for the baby and for the mom, who now did not become a murderer. You know, that's pretty neat. Talk about a Christian ministry. When you keep someone from becoming a murderer, that's great. So Saturday morning, I went down with hundreds of others to the state capitol in Denver. People all over the country for the March for Life on that Saturday to remember 29 years ago, Roe v. Wade legalized abortion in all 50 states, took away the right to life of the unborn. And so I was going there for the March for Life rally, but there was another small gathering down the hill in the park, down the west steps of the Capitol building in Denver. And so that attracted me. It was a little bit early, maybe an hour before the Right to Life rally was set to begin. So I went to see what was going on, and there was a temporary podium set up, and it turned out it was a meeting of the Libertarian Party, and some of their current or past candidates were speaking. And you know the Libertarian Party, if you don't know what they support, well, let me give you an idea. The Libertarian Party fights for the right to kill unborn children. They fight for legalized abortion. That's what that is, to kill unborn children. They fight for the right to commit suicide, the right of euthanasia for doctors to kill their patients. They fight for the right to commit adultery and fornication and pornography and to legalize prostitution and to keep homosexuality legal and bestiality. And they fight for the legalization of drunkenness, so it's legal to be drunk, and for the legalization of drugs like heroin and crack cocaine. That's the Libertarian Party. And for some bizarre reason, Christians tend to think the Libertarian Party is pretty good. That just has always blown my mind. So whenever I get a chance, we take a swipe at the Libertarian Party. So I was interested that they were meeting, and I saw at the podium was a guy I recognized immediately. It was a man that I have sparred with on Denver Public Television. His name is David Siegel. And I have to make a confession that I was a heckler on Saturday at this meeting. I was a polite heckler, I think, but I was a heckler, and I heckled this group of libertarians just, I think, two points. So I figured I'd listen in to David Siegel and just see if he says anything wrong. So it was about maybe 30 seconds into the part of his talk that I tuned in on. And boy, did he say something wrong. He said this. He said that police officers have the right to carry sidearms because, and only because, we as individuals have that right. And we have delegated that right to them. So he says cops could carry sidearms because we have the right to carry sidearms, and we've delegated that right to the government. So I shouted a question to him. I asked, then where does the government get its right to wield nuclear weapons? Okay, if his principle is correct, if the government's right to carry pistols comes from the individual's right to carry pistols, then does its right to build nuclear weapons mean that I could have one of my own? Because of course the government has the right to be armed and the right to build weapons of mass destruction in order to defend ourselves for use by the military. Sure, governments have the right to do that. So does that mean then that I have my own right? Let's say to own SAMs, surface-to-air missiles. Maybe a few Hellfire missiles that we mount in our second-story windows. Well, what came next after I shouted my question? All I asked was, then where does the government get its right to wield nuclear weapons? That's what I asked. And what came next was a rather embarrassing long pause, as the speaker seemed to have a hard time coming up with a response. He seemed beside himself, unable to pull the next words out of his mouth. So I repeated my question. If the government's right to carry pistols comes from the individual's right to carry pistols, David, then does its right to build nuclear weapons mean that I can have one of my own? Well, it seemed to me that he just brushed off my question and resumed his talk at the point at which I had so rudely interrupted. But it was a small informal gathering, and I wasn't attempting to shout him down. I only asked him a question in a setting that seemed to accommodate such. Well, the organizer of their event came up to me and asked me if I would like to be put on their roster to be the next speaker. Well, I was.
Some people believe that Christians can speak in tongues. Some people believe that speaking in tongues has passed away. Are we saved by grace alone, or are there works involved? Some people believe that miracles are happening today. Others don't. How can all these disagreements come from the Bible if it's the inspired Word of God? Is there an answer to all these questions? In his book, The Plot, Bob Enyart, pastor of Denver Bible Church, shows you the one Bible verse that solves all the apparent contradictions. Think that one verse can't solve these complex problems? Get The Plot today, and if you're not convinced, we will refund your money. Order The Plot for $29.95. Does God want the government to execute criminals? The Old Testament supports the death penalty, but now we are to turn the other cheek, right? The New Testament material concerning the death penalty starts in Matthew and continues through all the Gospels, Acts and Romans. It goes all through to Revelation. God and the Death Penalty is the video we've produced to arm you with the New Testament support for executing criminals. If the death penalty is immoral, then what does that say of God the Father demanding that Jesus Christ die on the cross for the forgiveness of our sins? God and the Death Penalty, a two-hour video exploring the biblical support of the death penalty, is available for $24.95 by calling 1-888-8-ENYART. Bob Enyart Live is back on the air, but to stay on the air and grow, we need to hear from you. We offer many products with Bob's insightful and unique biblical perspective. If you appreciate Bob's ministry, let us know by writing us at Bob Benyart Live, P.O. Box 583, Arvada, Colorado 80001, or go online to kgov.com.
Welcome back, Bob Benyart Live, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. All right, so the organizer came up to me and perhaps wanting to make sure I would shut up and let David Siegel finish his talk, he invited me, he asked if I'd like to be put on their roster and I could be the next speaker. Now, that's a tactic right out of my own playbook. That's what we do. When people come to protest me at a seminar I'm giving somewhere around the country, we invite them in to speak. Well, I said, sure, I'd love to. And he introduced me by name, Bob Benyart. And I want to let you know, give you a rundown of my short speech to them. This is what I said at my impromptu appearance at the recent Libertarian Party gathering. I said, I'll just tell you, I won't keep saying, then I said, but here's what I said. To govern correctly, you must understand authority. If you don't understand authority, you cannot govern rightly. The Libertarian Party repeats 1,000 times that our right to carry firearms does not come from the government. And that's true. But since that is so, then why do you constantly call it your Second Amendment right? I asked the Libertarian Party members there. Because by calling your right to self-defense a Second Amendment right, you mislead the public into thinking that right has come from the government. And I asked, didn't the right to carry a sidearm exist before the Constitution? To that question, David Siegel immediately shouted, yes! And he's right. And I responded, then don't call it a Second Amendment right and thereby undermine that right by obscuring its origin. The reason my question, I continued to talk to the group, the Libertarian Party members there, the reason my question about nuclear weapons gave David Siegel a difficulty is that he doesn't understand authority flow. Authority, like water, cannot flow uphill. Children do not give to their parents the right to exercise authority over them. Further, you can't delegate to others something you don't have. So if the government has the right to wield weapons of mass destruction and wealthy individuals do not have that right, then where does the government get that right? Where do they get that right? Now, at this point, David Siegel found his audacity, and he said that he shouted out that individuals do have the right to own nuclear weapons. Now, this is a leader in the Libertarian Party of Colorado, David Siegel. Individuals do have the right to own nuclear weapons, at which point I asked him, well, would the Libertarian Party say that Osama bin Laden, before he committed any crime, that bin Laden had the right to purchase a briefcase nuclear weapon? Did Osama bin Laden have that right? And with the applause of his fellow Libertarian Party members, he said, yes, he has that right. What a fool. You fool, David Siegel, I said to him. You realize that you're saying that out of desperation. But to the honest observer, I have exposed the error in your platform, and it was just that easy. You think that a Palestinian extremist, let's say a Muslim extremist who lives in Denver, does he have a right to bring his own little nuclear weapon to Cheeseman Park? He's going to the park, he's going to bring his little briefcase nuke with him. One nuke in downtown Denver would be quite a bargaining chip for a criminal or a terrorist. And no nation needs to permit an enemy army to be building within its own borders. So what a foolish man, David Siegel, in defense of his indefensible position. He said this. He said, well, you can have a nuclear weapon as long as I can shoot you if you misuse it. You can't shoot anyone, David, if you're vaporized. Just so absurd. So authority cannot justly flow uphill. You can't delegate something you do not possess. If you don't have the right to coerce the masses to behave in a certain way, then you can't delegate that right. You just can't. And after some prodding, I managed to get one of their spokesmen to agree with the point. I asked him directly, can you delegate something you do not have? And he hesitated, and another pro-lifer was standing on the side, and he said, can you give away something you don't have? And finally, he said, no. Well, then, if the government has the right to do anything that an individual does not have the right to do, then you must ask, from where does it derive that right? Authority, I answered the question to the group. Authority flows downhill from God through government to parents, and even the kid can kick the cat off the couch. Authority comes from God, I said. Oh boy, you should have seen the response. You didn't have to hear the response. You could have been standing 100 yards away and you would have seen it at the great objection to the mention of God. It was as if I had sprayed them with mace, the way they squirmed and shouted invectives. Well, that concluded my comments, so I went off to the side, hoping to continue to debate them one-on-one. But David Siegel, he flew right back to the podium, like a bird returning to die to its place of birth. And the Libertarian Party, you know, they see that the loss of liberty in America, they are able to see that some of our true rights have eroded. Well, the crowd of perhaps 25 people were applauding Siegel when he said, liberty is not the job of the government, it is our job. But then the polite heckler shouted out, then you're doing a lousy job of it. He says, liberty is not the job of the government, it is our job. Then you're doing a lousy job of it. He looked at me with utter frustration. What could he say? He couldn't hardly disagree with that. Well, I had two friendly witnesses to this event, both of whom just happened to wander by like I did. Tom Longeway, I've known him for years. He's a past president of Colorado Right to Life. And Philip Hendricks, he's the pro-lifer who was standing by, I mentioned a moment ago. In fact, Philip joined me, my son Nathaniel, and another friend as we traveled to Indiana for our Bible seminar the week of the terrorist attack. And that meeting, the Libertarian Party meeting, I think it was sufficiently foiled. And we had a great time, at least the three of us. And so two Libertarian Party members, they approached to refute my arguments. So the best defense is a good offense. So I asked one of them, is there such a thing as absolute right and absolute wrong? And he answered, no, there's not. So I followed up, was it absolutely wrong for the Nazis to kill 6 million Jews? No, he said. Huh? You know, I just asked him if there's such a thing as absolute right and wrong, and he said no. It's a rather stupid answer, but that's what he said. So now he's trying to stick with his ignorant answer. Was it absolutely wrong for the Nazis to kill 6 million Jews? He said no. In the earshot of maybe half a dozen people, with Philip standing at my side. I said, is it absolutely wrong for a man to violently rape a woman? He said no. You, sir, are a fool. So this 40-something man appeared slightly taken aback at that. And I told him, you've reached this point in your life without ever growing up. You haven't grown up. You don't know it's wrong to rape a woman or to murder innocent people? And then I felt the desire to publicize to the crowd what this man with the Libertarian Party badge had just said, that it was not absolutely wrong to kill 6 million Jews. If that's not wrong, then why scrap about the Republicans and the Democrats? They're not doing anything to hold a candle from the Libertarian Party's perspective. At that point, David Siegel gave this guy a soundbite to use against me. So he dutifully came back for more flogging. And he said, "Well, you say that God is the source of all authority, but that's what Osama bin Laden says. You're just like Osama bin Laden." To which I responded, "Osama bin Laden worships Allah, not Christ. Allah is a false God." And he said, "How do you know which God is true and which is false?" So I said, "Well, if the evidence against Allah condemns him, then we can dismiss him as the real God. But if the evidence overwhelmingly corroborates the claim of the God of the Bible, that he is the true God and the source of all authority and all liberty, then we need to submit to him." Well, not surprisingly, and being on autopilot, this libertarian disagreed with me on this, to which I responded, "You are unqualified to judge me, let alone God. You are unqualified to judge even me, let alone God. You don't know that it was absolutely wrong for the Nazis to murder 6 million Jews, you fool. You think it's wrong for the Denver City Council to prevent you from wearing a sidearm. Well, that's true. But then you stumble at whether or not it was absolutely wrong for Germany to slaughter millions of men, women, and children. You are a fool, and yet you set yourself up to judge God. Man, have you no sense?" So that was the end of the meeting. But there is a postscript. I went up the hill. Philip and I walked up the hill to the steps of the Capitol, and Tom Langua came up to me. We hadn't spoken earlier. And he said, "Bob, as soon as I came up here, I went right to Leslie Hanks." Now, Leslie's a friend of mine. She was on the show last week promoting the March for Life. And Tom Langua, former the past president of Right to Life, he said, "Leslie," and Tom is telling me of this conversation. He said, "Leslie, we have to stop referring to the right to life as a constitutional right." And she looked at him like, "Huh?" And he said, "When we do that, we undermine the source of that right, which is God. The right to life doesn't come from the government, doesn't come from the Constitution. It comes from God. Let's not call it a constitutional right. It's your right to life." You know, even small victories can be sweet. I didn't win over a libertarian, but a pro-lifer on that one small point. And it's an important point. From whence comes our life and liberty? From God, and from him alone. Nobody can make life, right? Can anybody make life? Remember the scientist who took the challenge to create life and then started by gathering some dirt? At which point God interrupted him and said, "Why don't you start with your own dirt?" What's that guy going to do? That guy's in big trouble. Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278.
All lines are busy at this time. For updated information on Bob's national tour and ShadowGov demonstrations, press 1. For Bob's mailing address, press 2. And if you're an atheist, an anarchist, an evolutionist, a humanist, a communist, a socialist, a garden variety, sodomite, a Democrat, or a transgendered freak of nature, press 3. If you're ordering by credit card, please leave your name and phone number, and your call will be returned.
Yeah, you must be them NYARC people. Well, I'm not like any of those things that I just heard in that list of things he just said. I'm not an evolutionist or nothing like that. But I would just want to know if you're the guy I've seen on Politically Incorrect. Yeah, that's it. I just wanted to tell you that I think you guys rock. You guys are really cool, and you need to keep up the good work. So this is George from Jersey. Out.
Hi, I'm a garden variety sodomite and a transgendered freak of nature, and I'd really love a call back from Bob Inyart. So if you could give me a buzz, my name's Cody Lightholt. My phone number is 7. I'd really appreciate being straightened out because I'm sick of being a dirty fag. So thanks a bunch, Bobby. Talk to you later.
Hey, Mr. Inyart, I have actually viewed your website, and then I saw you on Politically Incorrect 3 times, and, well, I don't know what to say about you. All I can say is that I had an uncle that died of AIDS. I'm sure you refer to it as the gay plague. All I can say is that the majority of gays in this country are better people than you. Better than you? Or any other thing that you could ever be. I hate you, and I wish you had cancer.
I have never in my life heard such a hypocrite as this Bob Inyart. How in the world do you dare put him on the air? How can he judge anybody? He is terrible. You ought to be ashamed to even have him walking around.
Hey, Bob, I'm drunk. And guess what? God ain't gonna help me on this one. Take a guess of what I'm drinking. I'm drinking some vodka and some strawberry crush, buddy. Let me tell you what. I bet you're against too, right? Yeah, let me tell you something. Oh, yeah, and juice, too. Guess what, Bob Inyart? I'll tell you something. Bob Inyart, guess what? I'm really seriously drunk, but anyhow. Check it out, though. So, I'm a garden variety sodomite. Bob Inyart. Check my Bob.
And we are back, Bob Inyart Live, 1-800-8-INYART, 1-800-836-9278. I'll take a call, and then I think I might tell you one more thing that happened with me and a Libertarian Party member. It was the state president of the Libertarian Party of Indiana, Brad Kloppenstein. And this was, I guess this was in the year 2000. Or 2001, and it was on the Stan Solomon radio show. I'll tell you what scenario I painted for the Libertarian Party and where they came down on it. But first, let's go to the phones in Hawthorne, New Jersey. I didn't even look at that until right now. Hawthorne, New Jersey. I grew up in Hawthorne, New Jersey. Let's see who this is. Connie, speak your mind.
Hello. Hi, my son.
Hi, Mom.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, listening to your show, I know one thing. I was reading Proverbs 24:25.
Yeah.
And it says, those who rebuke the wicked will have delight. I have it underlined.
Oh.
And a good blessing will come upon them. And you will certainly be blessed.
Because
you have the guts and the boldness to speak up, and I wish I had I'm getting it, but...
Mom, I think I got some of my boldness from you, obviously. But, if you rebuke the wicked, you'll have delight. I have to confess, it was fun. I enjoyed whooping up on those Libertarian Party people.
That was incredible.
Just to dismantle them, like Stephen in Acts chapter 7, how he had irresistible wisdom. They mm-hmm. couldn't respond to him.
Right.
Because they were fools. And if you know the truth, you know the Bible, you could expose wickedness, as Paul tells us to do.
Well, you're going to be blessed. I want you still to run for a political office under... a right-wing religious fanatic. Go right for it.
Well,
and see, maybe...
Nah. Well, for a few reasons, Mom.
What, yeah.
If If nominated, I would not run, and if elected, I would not serve. So it's just not worth it. Let's say you run for a state representative and you're one of 100 people.
Yeah.
And it's a committee of 100. You know, I'm glad that other Christian conservatives do that, but what they're managing to do is we're strangling ourselves a little bit more slowly with them in there. But I'd rather have my full time committed to teaching people, mostly Christians and unbelievers, the truth, the way things should be, and I'll do that with my life.
Well, that's great, honey.
Thank you, Mom.
The reason I'm calling, I thought I had a couple of good things that happened to me recently.
Yeah.
It might be of interest.
Yeah.
I had this this couple that we go out with occasionally for dinner.
Right. You and Al?
Pardon?
You and Al?
Yeah, my hubby.
All right.
Yeah, my hubby. And I had mentioned the Lord Jesus one time previous to them about inviting them to church with me. And he got very serious and a little ugly. And a very nice guy. And
nice guy, but you mentioned Jesus, and it brings out...
And I sensed, and I quickly was quiet. And this was months ago.
Now, if you mentioned Buddha, do you think he'd get ugly?
I don't know. I mean, he's a smart man, an engineer.
Right.
In his 60s, him and his wife. They've been married 40 years.
I guess if you mentioned Buddha, he wouldn't get upset.
Just
Jesus gets people angry.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So I told him, I said, you know, I mentioned this to my son because he knows that you're involved in the ministry. And he suggested that you would view Mount Moriah. And
our video that we put together, Mount Moriah, the evidence for the resurrection.
Right. So I asked you to send it to me, and I will give it to them. Well, it came in the mail today, and I had, and it's funny, the wife called me today, and I had to call her back. She wasn't home, and he answered. And I said, well, since I have you on the phone, let me tell you, I just received, and I said, this video, and I asked him, I said, I wasn't sure of our conversation the last time we talked. Do you believe in Jesus? And he said no.
Mm.
I could feel it wasn't nice on the phone.
Mm.
You know, and this is a nice, gentle, very gentle man. So I said, well, I told him, you suggested they view this, Mount Moriah. And he said no. And then I said, well, would you do it for me, please? I mean, it's not going to hurt.
Mm.
And he finally said, okay,
I'll
do it. He said, I'll do it.
So you didn't just take his refusal. You pushed a bit.
I did.
All right, Mom.
I did push. And normally,
that's bold.
Someone like him, I wouldn't have. I don't know what made me. And it worked.
So he said he would view it. So will
he
you
would
let,
view it.
Will you let us know if you get any response from
him?
Oh,
definitely, because then the wife called me when she got in.
Yeah.
And I told her about the story.
Yeah.
What I talked to her husband about.
Mm.
And she said, okay. And I said, don't forget, as soon as you finish viewing it, I said, you'll tell, you know, we want to talk about it.
Mm.
I want your opinion on it.
Good
so.
Man.
I'm just thrilled that they're going to view it.
Yeah, imagine now, a lot of people have come to the Lord through viewing this video, Mount Moriah.
Uh-huh.
The evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And it appeals to people who tend to be intellectual and they want to see evidence. That's who it appeals to.
Right.
And, you know, we have atheists and evolutionists who've gotten saved watching that video. So, boy, it would be exciting and a little bit of boldness in risking that they might get mad at you.
Yeah.
Saying, well, he said no, but I'm going to push it more.
Yeah.
Good for you.
And I just said, would you do it for me?
Yeah.
Very easy and soft.
Yeah.
And he said yes.
That's great, Mom.
I was so happy.
That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, Mom, since you're on the phone.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about something you told me that I thought was a funny thing.
Oh.
You were bringing someone you knew to a counselor for an eating disorder. Do you remember that story?
Oh, yes.
Tell me if I have this story right.
Yeah.
You were bringing someone to a counselor because this person you knew had an eating disorder.
Yeah, very bad.
Yeah, and so you found out, was it a Christian counselor?
It was definitely Christian.
Okay, so you went to a Christian counselor, and you're sitting in the weight room, waiting room.
Yeah, the two of us, we're sitting. We're wait. Well, this is after going through a few counselors.
Okay.
Always Christian. If I need them, I want a Christian, but...
Yeah.
Anyway.
And by the way, our church, Denver Bible Church, we have a Christian counselor. One of our members, Tammy Gildenzoff, is just a great counselor. But anyway, so... Well, let me tell it. You tell me if I got it right.
Yes.
Okay. So you're sitting in the waiting room, and a decidedly overweight woman comes out into the waiting room, and she's the counselor.
Yeah.
She weighs about 300 pounds.
Yeah.
And when she comes out, she's got a bowl of frozen yogurt or something, and she's eating it as she comes into the waiting room.
To get us.
And she's the counselor.
Yeah.
And it's for an eating disorder counseling session.
I wanted to, I looked at her and I thought, oh my, I didn't know what to say.
Yeah, and it's, you know, some people are overweight for different reasons. Some it's glandular or genetic, and uh-huh. Some they just eat too much, and others don't work out enough. But to be, I've never gone to a professional place of business and had somebody come to the waiting room while they're eating.
Right.
But
it was a little bowl with a spoon, and she was eating it.
That's just too, for an eating disorder counseling session.
Exactly.
300 pounds, and she's eating. Are little people having a, come on in, we'll do the eating disorder. Excuse me. Yeah, we'll do the eating disorder counseling session. Come on in.
Oh.
That's funny, Mom.
Well, that was the truth.
Yeah. But you know what? It reminds me of the sad story we did last week of the marriage counselor, a very popular marriage ministry nationwide, where the man who founded it announced he's divorcing his wife to marry a woman who is also married, and she's going to divorce her husband,
Oh. And
these two are going to get married.
Oh.
But he said there's no unfaithfulness involved.
Oh.
Isn't that sickening?
Oh.
There's no unfaithfulness involved. We just love people who are not our spouses. We're both going to get divorced. That's unfaithful.
My.
If anything is unfaithful, that's it. That's what God calls idolatry. When you love another God, he calls that adultery.
Yeah.
Wow, what a shame. Okay, Mother, thank you for your call.
Well, I'm happy to call. I'll keep you informed what's going on here in New Jersey.
All right, do that, Mom. I love you.
And keep it up. We need to hear more.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks.
Can a Christian lie without sinning? If the Nazis were at your door, is it a sin to lie to them so they don't find the family of Jews living in your attic? Was it wrong for the Hebrew midwives to lie to save the Israelite babies in Exodus chapter 1? And if that was immoral, then why did God reward them? Are Christians today nicer than God? Would the average Christian condemn Jesus if he came back today and call people names like swine, Matthew 7, or a dog, Matthew 15, or a snake or a brood of vipers, Matthew 23. Today, that would be considered unchristlike by most Christians, but he said it. And in an effort to make you more Christ-like, we've put together a 6-tape audio album called Nicer Than God. It's available for $29.95. Get the information you won't receive in the average Nicer Than God church. The world we live in is an immoral, disgusting mess. The problems parents face in raising children today are enormous and growing. So to help you in your responsibility to raise godly young men and women, we at Bob Benyard Live are offering the Train Up a Child package. The first item is a 100-page book written by Michael and Debbie Pearl called To Train Up a Child. With over 300,000 copies in print, this is an invaluable resource for parents based on biblical truth, not psychobabble. and always easy to understand and clear-thinking Pastor Bob Enyart rounds out this teaching tool. Included in the package are two sermons on child-rearing delivered by Pastor Enyart to his congregation in Denver, Colorado. Order the Train Up a Child package for $14.95 and get your child on the right path.
And we are back, Bob Enyart Live, 1-800-8-ENYART. Well, the lines are full, but remember that number for the next show. Let's go to Kansas, and Dave, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Doing well.
I was wondering, my cell phone's dying here, but I'll make this quick if I can.
All right.
The libertarian you were talking to, if you had asked him if by some chance he had been swept back in time to say that it's the time of the Aztecs or the Incas or somebody like that, and he came upon a ritual execution or slaying of a virgin.
Right.
Would he do anything to stop that?
Good question, because...
And if so, on whose authority would he do that?
Yeah, because the people conferred to the government that...
That was the right thing for them to do.
Right. Jeffrey Dahmer would have been the lead role model if he was an Aztec.
Yeah, he probably would have been president or whatever.
Yeah.
King, whatever. They had at
right.
The time.
And how many anthropologists have I asked, actually only a few, but on the air, if the Aztecs were wrong for taking a young woman once a year and killing her and skinning her and the high priest wearing her skin in front of the whole nation gathered?
Right.
And the anthropologists I asked that question to, they'd say, oh, we can't condemn other cultures.
Oh, we can't make that judgment. Yeah, right.
They condemn Ronald Reagan.
That's right.
If they can't condemn, how could they condemn Ronald Reagan if they can't condemn murdering a young woman and skinning her? They're so stupid, liberals.
One word, hypocrisy.
Yes, thank you, Dave.
I'll let you go.
Appreciate your call. Your cell phone hung in there. All right, now we're going to go to, I've got an email here. In Wichita, the abortionist George Tiller, he's providing free abortions to mark the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. So, see, the enemy is well-defined and the line is well-drawn. Let's go to Keith in Denver. Welcome.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Doing great, sir.
Good, good. Yeah, well, I work with a pro-life youth ministry. It's called Survivors. We're survivors of the abortion holocaust.
Survivors. So people who were born after 1973?
Right. After the start of the abortion holocaust that we have in America today.
Okay.
So anyway, I was calling. I have a story for you. Part of what I do with Survivors is I go and I talk with young people and I try and get more people involved in the pro-life movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to this church, and I was going to do a talk there and talk about abortion and really hopefully get people fired up. And I use a pretty good video when I go to these churches and do talks. It's called The Hard Truth. Have you seen the video?
I've seen that. It's nice and short, but it packs quite a punch of what really happens in abortion.
Right, right.
Right.
You know, it's pretty graphic. It really shows what an abortion is and that kind of thing.
Do you want to say which church it was?
It's Living Way Fellowship in Denver, in Littleton, Colorado.
Living Way Fellowship. That's one of the good-sized churches in Denver.
It's fairly, yeah, it has a pretty good number of people going to it. You know, they're a four-square church by denomination, I believe.
All right, and it's somewhat conservative morally. It's
what you would call a
pretty good church.
Yeah, I'd say most people bring their Bibles to church.
That's a
like
good
that.
Sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not too bad. Not too bad. But, you know, I bring the video to these talks and things like that because, you know, abortion today has really lost its meaning, especially to Christians who should really get upset about it, you know.
Right.
People hear the word abortion, they don't really know what it means. So you show them what it means, you know, kind of
right.
Like the same theory that Steven Spielberg had when he made the videos of the Holocaust.
Right, exactly. Schindler's List to show people what the Holocaust was so it doesn't happen again.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. I think he made the statement, he's like, how could you describe something with words, something that's unimaginable?
Mm.
You know, And so that's kind of the same way abortion is. Anyway, so I go to this church. I thought it was great. You know, I was invited in to speak and talk with their college-age, you know, people, young adult college group. And,
right.
And I was planning to show the video. At first, they were like, yeah, you know, this is really bad. We're really pro-life here. You know, there's the president of a pretty reputable crisis pregnancy center here in Denver attends the church and was actually one of the founding members.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, wow, this is should be a good church. You know, they're good in pro-life.
Yeah, pro-life church, right.
So, you know, they agreed, and they're like, yeah, we really need to do this, and we'll show the video and that kind of stuff. Well, I get there, and they pull the video. They say, no way.
Oh, you mean they told you could show the video, and then they backed out?
Then they backed away from it. And the rationale they gave me was, the elders of the church had a meeting, and they didn't feel that it would be wise to horrify the people of their church, the members of that college group.
These are adults you were going to show it to, right?
Adults, yeah, adults in college. And you know, in the first year, some have even graduated college.
Oh, brother.
And so pretty disheartening.
You know, the timidity that's in the church, leaders are so timid. They lack boldness. You know, my mom was just on before you, Keith.
I know, I heard.
She was talking about being bold, and I tell you, that story is sort of minor for her boldness. She really gives it to people when they fight against the Lord or look the other way for abortion or homosexuality. But our leaders are so timid. They don't want to offend anyone.
Right.
These are adults in a pro-life church, and they're afraid. Oh, you're not allowed to see that video here. You're not. You're only over 21. So you gave the talk, though.
So I gave the talk, you know, and I was just disappointed. You know, I walked in and kind of, you know, stopped in my tracks. I was like, well, you know, and you know, I almost felt like I was not telling the whole truth, you know, because I didn't get to show the video, and I don't know. I was just disappointed. It seemed like we were playing church, and I was like, I felt that, you know. It's easier to tolerate sin when you're not willing to confront it in a certain way. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that is a discouraging story, Keith. And what I think the solution is that one of the things we need to teach to the body of Christ is boldness. We don't have it. We're a timid group of people. We're afraid to offend anyone.
Yeah, not you, Bob, though, huh?
Well, I've been working on that for all these years.
Hopefully. Yeah, I'll commend you, Bob. Yeah, that's something that I've learned listening to your show through the years and things like that. That's helped me even join the pro-life ministry and do something about the children that are being killed is to be bold and not back down.
Wow.
I'm
humbled to hear that, Keith. And, you know, praise the Lord. That's one of the things we've heard for 10 years now from people in the audience, that Bob and Yart Live has taught them how to be bold, to defend the gospel, to open your mouth and speak up. When somebody says, I don't want to hear about Jesus, well, you can push it a little bit and maybe break through their hard outer shell. It gets to a point where you just blow them off. Like Jesus said, don't cast your pearls before swine.
Exactly.
But we've got to be bold. Jesus was bold, and he wasn't. Do you think Jesus was afraid of offending people, Keith?
I don't think so.
No?
I don't. My intuition tells me no.
You mean he didn't say, well, I'd like to tell that woman that it's wrong for her to sleep around that woman at the well, the Samaritan woman, but I'm afraid I might offend her.
Yeah, so I better do it in a nice way, right?
I'm not going to mention her five husbands and that she's shacking up with some guy right now. Surely that would offend her. So I have to take a different tact. Could you imagine the Lord being like that? He says, look, lady, you've had five husbands, and the guy you're shacking up with right now, you're not even married to. That cut her to the quick. That got her attention.
Exactly right.
Go ahead.
Bob, can you think of any place in the Bible where the truth is suppressed because of for the sake of feelings, for the sake of, you know, the prophets and you know, the apostles and things? Where the truth was kind of padded just so people's feelings didn't get hurt.
How about when John the Baptist refused to say that Herod was an adulterer because he was worried that Herod would get mad?
Oh,
wait a minute.
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. I got that story right. John the Baptist did call Herod an adulterer, and he got his head cut off for it.
That's right. That won't work. That's not a good example.
See, but if you have a big church, you'll look at that story and you think, I'd rather get my paycheck than my head cut off, so I'm not going to call the president an adulterer.
Yeah, that's true.
It's discouraging.
It is.
You know, Jesus is called the rock of offense three times in the Bible. He offended people. At one time, the apostles came to him and said, Lord, do you know that they were offended by what you said? And Jesus said, oh, I'm so sorry. They must have misunderstood me. Let me go back and put it in different words. He didn't do that. He said, there's a lot more where that came from.
Right.
That's what he said, practically, sort of.
I think about, you know, speaking the truth in love. So if you're not speaking the truth, what is that? Is that love?
Right. Good point. Very good point. And Jesus said, what did Jesus say to the Ephesians in the book of Revelation? Something about, he said that he liked them because they couldn't stand evil.
They hated it.
You know, they hated evil. And today, Christians don't know what that means, to hate evil. They're taught you can't hate anything.
Exactly.
So it's a bit frustrating.
Yeah. I remember one time I went to that church and they were having people come up for prayer and things. I was just kind of visiting the church to see what it was like.
Keith, could you speak up a little bit? I was missing you there.
Yeah. I went to the church one time and I went up for prayer. You know, I figured, you know, it's a good time to pray for me. But I almost went up just almost with the idea to teach them something. Mm. So one of the pastors of the church came over to pray for me, and I told him, I really just need some prayer. I need to be able to hate. And he kind of stood back, and he's like, brother, what did you say? I need to be able to hate.
Keith.
I seem to be tolerating sin too much.
Keith, you are brilliant.
And
what did he say?
he kind of went through with it, hesitantly, but he never prayed for me.
He never had anybody ask, could you pray for me? I need to know how to hate.
Yeah, I think evil. I shocked him a little bit, but I was able to have a pretty good discussion with him afterwards.
That's great. You know, I just turned to it, Revelation 2. Warning, Will Robinson, their Bible verse up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at Bob and Yurt Live that you would like to silence anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice. Raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Keith, Jesus said to the church of Ephesus, he said, I know your works, your labor, and your patience, and that you cannot bear those who are evil. Isn't that beautiful? They can't bear them. That's why we despise the child killers at Planned Parenthood. And we want to close them down. Hey, have you ever heard of Missionaries to the Preborn?
I have.
Well, I got their newsletter today from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And they've got a photograph here of the Planned Parenthood clinic in some town in Wisconsin. And it's closed.
Good.
It's closed. Four Planned Parenthood clinics have closed down in Wisconsin in the past 2 years, and that's since Missionaries to the Preborn has started a concerted effort to expose them as Murder, Inc.
Phenomenal.
The child killers. Isn't that great?
That's great. Without offending anybody, I'm sure.
That's right.
Thanks,
they didn't
Bob.
Offend a single person. Thank you, Keith. Keith from Denver, I appreciate that. Another bold listener out there in Radio Land, and it's an honor to have people like Keith and Dave and Mom in the audience. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences. Do right.